You know, there's been a lot of things that have gone on in the history of the world where the people have tried to destroy this and discredit this and ignore this. So it lives, it exists, and it has an impact and influence in the world in spite of what man in general has tried to do to it. Looking at concepts and ideas about the Bible, not content necessarily, but concepts about the Bible and kind of how it came to be the book that it is, how we got that book, how it's structured. So we're going to continue that conversation today. And you think about the Bible. You know, that is a book. I mean, if you think about this book and the impact that this book has had on the world for centuries, it's really amazing when you think about this, because there's a lot of books. I mean, I've got a library of probably, well, before we moved to Florida and I downsized considerably, I probably had a library of about 4,000 or 5,000 books. Whole conference room full of them, bookshelves at home, in my office, at various places. I mean, I've just been an avid collector of books through the years. So, but you think about this book compared to all the rest of the books that have been written throughout the world. It's been pretty important in most of our lives. And in order for that to occur, you had to believe what this book said. So just stripping back all of the fluff, why do you believe that book? I mean, Charles Dickens wrote a bunch of books. Tennyson wrote books. Milton wrote books. There's been thousands and thousands, millions of books that have been written through the years. Why do you believe this one? Ron?
Number one, I think it proves its accuracy historically. We can go back historically as far as we possibly can and find that it's never been wrong about any particular subject. And then it provides us a creator and a guide, and it provides the good with the bad and allows you to make a choice between it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Shaq, you started to say something.
I'm old school to the standpoint that I agree with Ron that it's proven over the hundreds of years, and I have great faith in the fact that it is inspired.
Okay, all right. So, got another question.
I also agree with all of those things, but I think a different part for me was my parents believed it, my grandparents believed it. Historically, my whole family has been raised believing that the Bible is true and it's never failed. Okay. So I think that my history also leads me to believe it in my experience.
Yeah, you know, my grandfather was an elder in the church. My dad was a minister in the church. And my grandparents on their coffee table, there was a big old thick family Bible. And Bible's been a part of my family's life as long as I've been alive. And far way back beyond that. But, you know, believing something doesn't necessarily make it true. You know, you can believe the Bible, and I don't want to believe the Bible because, you know, the Bible says that there is a life after this life that's a lot better than what we're going through here. That's a very positive message, a very great message. But I don't think that's good enough. I don't think that's the entire story. Not the whole reason why we should believe the Bible. It's really a marvel of history, if you will. And I say that because this book lives in spite of men. You know, there's been a lot of things that have gone on in the history of the world where people have tried to destroy this and discredit this and ignore this. So it lives, it exists, and it has an impact and influence in the world in spite of what man in general has tried to do to it. So, yeah, it gives you a better picture of afterlife. I mean, my parents believed it. It's a positive image. It's a good rule for my life. You know, there's a lot of reasons why we might think, well, that's a good book. I want to believe that. Go ahead, Ron.
The things that have happened, too, that we read about were not done in secret. They were done by and observed by so many different people, and efforts were made to diminish some of the impact by a lot of different people, all in a public way, so to speak. A lot of other books that we call religious books were written by somebody in seclusion without any evidence, and you got to put your faith in just what he claims to have seen, he or a number of others.
Absolutely. So, you know, there are a lot of people, and Paul asked the question about the Book of Mormon a couple weeks ago. You know, that's 150 years, maybe. I mean, when that was written, and supposedly an inspired book, but. You know, I think I said at that time, I think the history of that, Joseph Smith has this revelation, lives in Palmyra, New York, of all places, and supposedly he's inspired by 12 gold plates that are buried somewhere on the farm, and he's led to those, and coming out of that, he writes the Book of Mormon. And that's had an influence on a lot of people in the world. Specifically in Utah, a lot of people in Utah. But, you know, there's a lot of books. You're exactly right. There's a lot of books that have, and their influence is for good. I mean, there are a lot of good books that influence our lives. Norman Vincent Peale. Anybody remember his most famous book? Maybe his only book. I don't know. Kind of The Power of Positive Thinking. You know, that's a good book. It's good. I think it has a good impact on us, on individuals and how they relate to each other. There's all sorts of books that I ran into teaching communication in the university level. There were good books. Great positive influence on people's lives, but not what this is doing. So let me share with you this morning and let's talk about five reasons, I believe, why we should believe the Bible. And I think there's the five of them very briefly. Certainly it's indestructible, been around a long time, and we just mentioned that briefly. The prophecies that are in part of the Bible, which were done years ago, and we'll get into that year discrepancy here a little bit later, came to fulfillment during the New Testament times, hundreds of years after those prophecies were made. The unity of the book, we talked about that a little bit a few weeks ago. Archaeology has proven that many things that the Bible talks about that men said didn't exist did exist. And then the knowledge of science, the whole issue of science. Is the Bible a scientific book? Well, it's not a scientific book, but it knew science. The people who wrote it knew some scientific facts that were kind of interesting to think about. So as I said a minute ago, just believing something does not necessarily make it true. Can you think of things that people have believed that really we found out later weren't true? Earth was flat. There was times it's supposed to, Earth supposed to, yes, sir.
The biggest one, I think, was the pig bone that they used to for evolution that, you know, made the front page of the news, and I think they probably still embarrassingly teach today. But they, you know, I loved also the global warming. The theorists that did that came out, I don't know, 15 years later, and some of the same scientists said that the hypothesis or the facts that they called facts that they used at that time have since been found to be not as valid or completely invalid. So science, just like the medical field, they're the best protectors of their mistakes. And so, you know, I also, one thing I thought about, the first time my wife and I went to Europe, went to Florence, the big museums, all the people back in that day had, all the artists painted memories of their, or not memories, but things about the Bible. Uh-huh. You know, almost all the artisans of that time painted, whether it be the Lord's Supper with the apostles and things of that nature. But yeah, science is the biggest covering up of mistakes that they've made. And I think that's a big problem in our world.
Yeah, we've actually, you talk about global warming, we've now changed that term. It's now called climate change. So, and I have no doubt that because of what we dump into the air with fossil fuels and so forth, that we're having an impact on our climate, but we don't know as much as we think we know about it. You know, I think science is we don't know as much about the COVID virus as we think we know about it. Go ahead.
I've never heard even Christians say, you know, God said this, or Jesus said, rather, that this place was going to burn with a fervent heat. You know, they've never, scientists or any Christian I've ever heard even, you know, discuss that. God said this a long time ago, just like he said, the rivers under the ocean and things of that nature. God spoke things that we find out true, you know, year by year, but he said this place is going to burn up. So this has been God's plan, and now they're realizing it, but nobody ever discusses that.
That's right. We're going to look at a couple of examples of that here in just a minute. But when you look at religious or moral beliefs that have been propagated throughout the centuries, I mean, when you go into the Far East, there's the Buddhist belief. If you go into the Middle East, there's the Islamic belief. And so I've heard people say that we need to believe the Bible because people died to protect it. Well, okay. But they also died to protect other things. They've died to protect other beliefs, if you will. And I believe that when you really get to the point of, do I believe this, you have to ask yourself the question, is it true? That's the foundation. If something is true, then we can base our lives on it. We can let that be the influence that I am comfortable living under the direction of this book because it's true. And so, why do we believe it's true? I said those five reasons there in just a minute ago. Let's look at those one at a time. First of all, let's look at the indestructible nature of the Bible. Well, the Bible has survived attacks from two different groups. Friends and enemies, I guess is a general. Friends, the attacks have been less apparent, but I think it's probably more out of negligence from friends. You know, the people who believe the Bible, we who believe the Bible today, don't protect it as much as we should. We don't study it as much as we should. It's an influence for good. You know, there was a time when every house in the country had it on the coffee table. How many times was that open? Well, when there was somebody born in the family, they'd open up to the page between the New Testament and Old Testament and write in another birth date. That was the family Bible. And you can go into antique stores around the country. You can find those big, thick family Bibles, and you go in and look at those records. And that was the way they kept records. not so much the content of the book. A lot of religious groups depending upon their leaders to tell them what the book said. They never read it for themselves. So there's a sense of negligence, I think, that permeated the people's view of the Bible for years and years. They just didn't pay that much attention to it. And certainly there have been attacks from enemies throughout the years. And the Catholic Church is a prime example of that, where they wouldn't let the people, they wouldn't see the Bible. I mean, the priest told people what it said. Probably not always accurate. So probably one of the biggest enemies of the Bible. Jehoiakim was said to have cut with a knife and burned Jeremiah's prophecy. One of the first, and that was in before Christ. Antiochus the Fourth, who had the nickname of the Madman, in 100 BC, burned all the scriptures and prophecies that he could find. And you come on down to 303 AD, Diocletian ordered all Bibles to be burned. So there were people who actually saw the Bible as a threat. In those last two cases, saw the Bible probably as a threat to their power and their influence. Them being ruling monarchs of the time, saying, hey, if you're going to believe the Bible, it says there's somebody greater than I am, and nobody's greater than I am, so I'm going to burn that book that said that. Destroy the message, if you will. So in spite of those things, the Bible survived. And while, as Richard and I both have said a couple of times in prior sessions of this class, we don't have the actual manuscripts that Paul or Matthew or Jeremiah or any of the writers of the Bible, we don't have the actual manuscripts that they wrote. But we have one generation removed from that. And so finding those things, protecting those documents, has been something that I think has been exceptionally important for us. The second reason has to do with the fulfillment of prophecy. How is the fulfillment, if you will, of prophecy an indication that we should believe the Bible? Why is that important? Jen?
Because when we can look at contemporary prophets, most recently, most of us were here when the 20th century became the 21st century, and there were all these prophecies or predictions about the global doom that would happen with Y2K and all of that. When you look at the prophecies of men, especially those that have to do with, well, the world is going to end on this date, or the world is going to end on that date, then you compare it with the prophecies of the Bible. And I was just looking up some notes that I have. There's a mathematician named Peter Stoner. He says that there are 333 Old Testament prophecies about Jesus. And about 27 of those deal with the events around his death. He said that, and then he just took 8 of those. Now, this is a mathematician, and he estimated the odds of those 8 coming true the way they did to be 1 in 10 to the 17th power, which would be, of course, 1 with 17 zeros.
A lot of zeros.
And he gave a fantastic, if you took that many silver dollars and spread them across the state of Texas, they would cover the state 2 feet deep. And if you took one of those silver dollars and marked it, and then took a guy and blindfolded him and told him that he could go as far as he wanted to walk, but he had to pick out one silver dollar. The odds of him picking up that one silver dollar would be 1 in 10 to the 17th. So just the statistical odds, and there were far more than 8 prophecies concerning Jesus, concerning all kinds of other things that have come true. Look at the New Testament prophecies. Look at what Paul said about in latter days some will depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of demons, and about how people would twist the scriptures to their own destruction. When you talk about prophecies being accurate, that is one of the greatest things that can give us confidence that this book is from God, because he who knows no tomorrow knows tomorrow.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. I think it's a good point, and I want to give you some illustrations here in just a second. But Peter said that men of God spake as they were moved by the Holy Spirit. And so I think that's why you have prophecies. Men were moved by the Holy Spirit, and ultimately, hundreds of years later, those things occurred, and these original writers could not have known that. That's like me saying, I know what's going to happen 500 years from now, and here it is. Well, none of us are going to be around to check on that, but if I write it down, people who are here could check on it. And it came true. So let's look at this. Isaiah said that Babylon would be destroyed and would never be rebuilt again. Has it ever been rebuilt? No. How did he know that? God inspired him to say that. Moses, in Deuteronomy, the 28th chapter, predicted the destruction of Jerusalem. And hundreds of years later, that happened. 1,500 years later, close to being exact. Josephus said Jericho would be rebuilt at a cost of the oldest and the youngest child in people's lives. 500 years later, that happened. But let's look at a few other examples. There's another good article that Tim Chaffee wrote a couple years ago about reasons to believe the Bible. And these are specifically about Christ, about the Messiah. In Isaiah, the 7th chapter, in the 14th verse, the writer predicts that Christ would be born of a virgin. And in Matthew, the 1st chapter, in the 25th verse, the fulfillment of that prophecy comes true, and that's 730 years after Isaiah said that. 730 years. Micah. In Micah 5, verse 2, said the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem. And again in Matthew, the 2nd chapter, the 1st and the 6th verse, 742 years later, Matthew records that Jesus was born in Bethlehem. Now think about this, 700 plus years. You know, we're living in, the current year, 2022, go back 700 years. That's like somebody in 1300 saying they know what's going to happen in January of 2022. That's unheard of. In Zechariah, the 11th chapter, in the 12th verse, reveals that the Messiah was going to be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. Zechariah was written sometime between 520 and 518 B.C. In Matthew, the 26th chapter, the 15th verse, Matthew wrote the book sometime between 50 and 70 A.D., about 560-something years later. So I took the latest time that the Old Testament could have been written, that book could have been written according to scholars, and the earliest time that the New Testament writers could have written it, to make that as short as it could be, just to try to be as reasonable as I could about this, that's 568 years. In Psalms, the 22nd chapter and the 18th verse, talks about the Messiah's clothing will be divided at the cross. And we don't know exactly, Psalms is written over a long period of time, somewhere between 1450 and 430 B.C. But in John, the 19th chapter and the 24th verse, which was written sometime as early as 85, as late as 85 A.D., that's 515 years. Isaiah said the Messiah would be wounded for our sins around 640 B.C. In 1 Peter 2:24, 63 years after Christ was on the earth, 703 years later, it's revealed that that's what happened. He'd be killed for others in Daniel 9:26. 2 Corinthians 5:21 is the fulfillment of that prophecy some 585 years later. And finally, Psalm 16:10 talked about him being raised from the dead. And on Luke 24, chapter the 6th verse, one of the places, 488 years later, is the fulfillment of that prophecy. So, I've got a lesson that I did several years ago that has a whole page of those prophecies that occurred. In fact, if you've ever seen, I think it's a Dickinson Bible. Anybody have a Dickinson Bible? It's a study Bible. I believe that's the Bible that has the little stars at the end of verses, which is a reference to the Christ, which is coming, a reference to the Messiah. And that's dotted throughout the entire Old Testament. Dickerson, I think. Dixon. I don't know if there's any difference or not. but the one I know is the study Bible that has all of the parentheses telling you what the writer. I have a tough time reading publicly from that because I have to figure out which in parentheses to skip as I do that. My mom gave it to me, and it is a good study Bible. But after the verses, there's little stars, and that star is a reference to the coming Messiah. And there's hundreds of them. Jan said there a minute ago, there's hundreds of them throughout the Old Testament. What did you say, 2,500 references in the Old Testament to Christ?
I think it was 333. I'll look it up.
Hundreds of references in the Old Testament to the coming Messiah. So, second reason, the fulfillment of prophecy. So that's a certainly, to me, that's the one that is so impactful. The fact that somebody 730 years ago could say something and it would come true today.
800 prophecies in the Old Testament and 333 were specifically about Jesus.
800 prophecies, 333 about Jesus. Okay. Thank you. So let's look at the third reason, the unity of the Bible. Why is the absence of contradictions in the Bible convincing proof that the Bible is from God? Why would you think that absence, back here, Rob?
They say, I fly airplanes, and they say one of the worst things you can have is people that observed an airplane crash and what it did. So you have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John at least witness the life of Jesus, and they all told the same story. And if you have a car accident or an airplane or any other tragic accident, and obviously the death of Jesus was a tragic accident of the people who loved him, but yet they told the same story. And I always think that that's interesting when someone saw something that was tragic that cost people their lives, they didn't see what they think they said. And if you have a video of it, it proves it.
Absolutely. You know, I have a friend who's chief of police in Oak Ridge. We live there. And he said you could have two cars coming to an intersection and butt heads in the middle of that intersection and people standing on the corners watching that accident, and they couldn't even agree on the color of the cars, much less who was at fault. Because when people start seeing things and talking about things, their emotions get involved, and it's twisted or elevated or changed or makes more sense if it sounds this way. There's an exercise that I used to do when I taught communications classes. And I would send five people out of the room. And I'd bring the first person in, and I would tell that person about a 8 or 10 line story about a farmer from western Kansas. Simple little story. Tornado blew the roof off his barn. A farmer found it a few counties away. He decided he wanted to sell that scrap tin, so the Ford Motor Company would buy the scrap tin and melt it down and reuse that scrap metal. And so he shipped it up to the company, so on and so forth, and he had a culmination of the story. So 8 or 10 sentences, that was it. And then you ask the second person to come in and ask the first person to tell them that story. And what you found out was that every person who told the story left about half of the details out. In most cases, and you counted the details, there were 21 details in that story. And by the time you got to the end, there were probably 3, maybe 4 that were accurate. Now, you know, you think about the Bible, written over 1,600 years by over 40 authors who didn't know each other. They didn't get into a room like this and compare notes. I mean, you mentioned Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I mean, live roughly the same time frame. May have known each other, but they didn't get into a room and decide what they were going to write. They didn't check each other. Did you say that? No. Did you say this? Did you put that in your book? They didn't do that. Just wasn't done during that period of our history. And they certainly didn't put it on a computer so everybody could fact check stuff. I mean, this is 1,600 years of 40-something people, and you've got the unity that you have in that book. That's miraculous. Yes.
Luke was not one of the apostles, but he traveled with Paul considerably, but he wrote one of the gospels, and it agreed with the other three.
Yeah. I think one of the things interesting about the apostles, and specifically when you start talking about the writers of the New Testament, Paul wrote most of the New Testament, but, books that we write today, and other books that were written that profess a certain morality or claim to be religious books, they kind of whitewash the story. You know, as I was doing the research resulting from Paul's question about the Book of Mormon a couple of weeks ago, I found all these reasons why it had to be true, A lot of people criticizing it couldn't be true. And so you find authors or owners of a document try to make it as positive as you can. Bible doesn't do that. You know, I can't imagine the Bible taking a man, who's a man after God's own heart? Who?
David.
David. And what does the Bible tell you David did? He sinned, he committed adultery, he committed murder, but he was a man after God's own heart. That gives me hope. I mean, here's one of the giants of the Bible. That the Bible tells the truth about that. Go ahead.
If you look into the history of the Mormon church, for example, there's some mighty terrible things that happened and enforcing that religion on people and preventing those who had determined that it not to be correct, what happened to them. And the same thing we're seeing, there's no use skirting the issue. We're seeing on the news things that have happened recently in the Catholic Church with the abuse of children. And there's books that have been written about nuns and so forth, abused. And people just ignore it for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
Yep. So we present the positive in a lot of ways, but we ignore the negative. The Bible doesn't do that. Paul's conflict with the people he was traveling with, that's talked about. I mean, this is a reality, if you will. And so I think that there's some unity in here that is brought about by the way it's written and when it was written and who wrote it and over what periods of time it was written. Fourth reason, and we only have about 7 or 8 minutes here. Fourth reason has to do with is the Bible a book of science? So is this a scientific manual? No. You're right, it's not a scientific manual. But there's at least a couple of instances in the Bible that it says things that we didn't believe. When were we trying to determine whether or not the earth was flat or round? Or we believed it was flat. When was that? Columbus's time period. You know, that argument in 1400s, just 600 or 700 years ago. But you can go back all the way to Isaiah 40, verse 22, where it talks about the circle of the earth. We also, during that same period of time, there were a lot of people that thought the earth was riding on the back of a turtle. I didn't go back and look at that, but that really sounds interesting. I got to go back and find out where in the world did that come from. Or on the shoulders of Atlas. And I could understand that with Greek mythology, why they would think about that. But in Job, the 26th chapter, the 7th verse, it says the earth hung on nothing. And so, to me, scientific facts that we have discovered in just the last relatively few years, if you take about 1400s, compared to thousands of years ago, scientific facts that we have discovered were known by the writers of this book, Isaiah, what was that, 600 or 700 years before Christ. So nearly 3,000 years ago. So while it wasn't written as a textbook on science, it certainly knew scientific facts before we discovered them as human beings. And then archaeology, the final reason. We talked several weeks ago a little bit about the impact of archaeology. And whether or not the study of archaeology is kind of a testimony for or against the Bible. And you look at some of the things that have happened through the years. Can you have you think of archaeological finds that have confirmed biblical writings? Noah's Ark. There was a National Geographic article, I don't know when it was, back when I was a kid, that said that there had been some artifacts found on what traditionally had been known as Mount Ararat, that said that could have been a place where the Ark was left. Yes, Jim?
There, in the last 5 or 6 years, have been some significant digs in the valley where David and Goliath met, and that discovered the ruins of David's palace, and with carvings and things that indicate that David, there's been a lot of talk about David being a mythological, like King Arthur, but they have found writings and carvings, especially in this dig, that confirm that David did live, and they've also found some in some of the surrounding countries.
Yes, and I mentioned 2 weeks ago that the Smithsonian Magazine came out with the story that they found these remnants in a site that they were doing archaeological digs that said that this very well could have been the real Mines of Solomon, which people said were fiction. They've also told us that the Hittites never existed. Scholars have told us that. Now we find archaeological finds that said, yes, they did. They were a nation. That Belshazzar was never king of Babylon. But we find evidence archaeologically that, yes. Yes.
Something.
That's in the British Museum.
Right.
I've actually seen that. Not sure when I looked at what I was seeing, but because I couldn't understand it. But yes, there were beliefs that Nineveh never existed, but we've found the remnants of that city. The Moabite Stone, the Rosetta Stone. I mean, there's this discovery after discovery after discovery as you go through the years that people say, oh, look what we found. Like that's something new. But 2,000 years ago is when it happened. We've known about it ever since we've been reading the scriptures. And we act like that's something new. And so it seems to me that for these five reasons, the indestructible nature of the Bible, the prophecies that the Old Testament talks about that are fulfilled in the New Testament by people who didn't know that person who wrote it in the Old Testament and had no connection with him, 1,500 years or 1,000 years later, wrote something else, the unity of the Bible, the foreknowledge that the Bible has of scientific facts that we have discovered in the last few hundred years, and then the nature of the archaeological finds associated with what the Bible shares with us as history. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people can believe in the Bible. But I think as you look at it, you know, And there's nothing scriptural about this. It's a personal view. But I think of a life that is defined by the principles in this book. What would a life that's defined by the principles in this book look like compared to a life that didn't have it? What would a society that is influenced by the principles in this book look like compared to societies which we have in this world today, which have never even seen this book? I mean, the influence for good in individuals' lives and societies' lives is enough of a reason to believe in it, because of the impact that it has on people's lives and on nations' lives. So that's kind of my lesson for today. Questions or comments that you have about this? Once again, if you want to read a good article, Tim Chaffee about 4 or 5 years ago wrote an article called Three Evidences That Confirm the Bible Is Not Made Up. And he talks about some of the same things that I've talked about, but the content of the Bible, archaeology, and the prophecies are the three things that he looks at as being reasons that he would say the Bible is not made up. Questions, comments? We're 10 seconds past, we're supposed to stop. So, I'm a good timer if nothing else. Thank you very much for your comments and participation today.